Brandon Thurston from Wrestlenomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Pollock and Thurston. It is Wednesday, January the 22nd, where we are in the midst of a polar vortex, both in the weather, politically, and everywhere. And here we are, Toronto and Buffalo coming together. It is frothy out there, Brandon, is it not? How are you holding up in Buffalo?
It's freezing. It's things in general are very horrible right now. Fahrenheit 11 degrees, which is a lot better than it was this morning when I think it was a -5 or so in Celsius. Google tells me that that's the equivalent to -12 Celsius.
Yeah. We're sporting a cool -11 Celsius here in Toronto. But I'll tell you what's red hot in Buffalo. That is your football team. The ongoing story, Brandon, another week that the Bills are alive. We are down to the final four, and we're going to have a preview of this showdown. Yes. This show indeed will be previewing the Bills and Chiefs, because we will have Brandon representing Buffalo, the lovable underdog, against Pat Mahomes and Rich Fans, Kansas City Chiefs. They will be going head-to-head this coming Sunday. Who is going to the Super Bowl, I guess? Is the city just shutting down on Sunday?
I don't know what will happen if the Bills go to the Super Bowl. It will be an unreal situation here in Western New York. I have not been able to confirm yet whether this game on Sunday in Kansas City is going to be taking place inside of a steel cage, but we're working to confirm that. Hopefully we'll have that later in the week.
Is there a feeling that the NFL is rooting for the Kansas City Chiefs and Taylor Swift having a storyline for the Super Bowl? Do you feel that you guys are the underdogs against everybody here? I got the last seat on the Bills bandwagon. Okay. I'm all behind Buffalo.
You're a Bills fan now.
I am. Now that they've made the Final Four, I've decided to pledge my allegiance.
All right. Well, I don't know. You know, I think that the female viewership was up last year, but will it be a similar effect this year? I don't know. We've sort of been to that show. So hopefully the Chiefs get eliminated in embarrassing fashion on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, you know, crazy things have happened. The Detroit Lions out.
Yes. I mean,
wild thing. Could we get, imagine a Washington Commanders Buffalo Bills Super Bowl. I mean, wow. Could you have forecasted such a outcome in this year's NFL season?
Well, it was Washington and the, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the name it was at the time, but in 1992, that was the Super Bowl. Bills, Buffalo versus Washington.
I think this is where all roads lead to New Orleans. Well, we are going to be chatting about many topics. As we mentioned, we'll be joined by Rich Fan from the Pro Wrestling Torch. We're going to be getting into the WWE.
Oh, I've heard TNA. He's a fan.
Yes. Yeah. We will set aside differences. I will be the moderator if such.
You're Bill. You just admitted that you're totally biased in the situation, though.
Yeah, I did put my thumb on the scale there. But we will chat with him about this WWE TNA partnership that has now been put on paper. We will talk about that. We have an update on the latest involving Janelle Grant and Dr. Carlin Kolker, a very rare Nick Khan appearance at the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority. An acronym that I know Brandon has definitely sought out. And we have some AEW news, but above all else, folks, wealth and how much of it was accumulated by Netflix over this last quarter. We had a monstrous earnings report from Netflix where they got to flex their muscles, adding nearly 19 million subscribers in the fourth quarter, taking them over the 300 million subscriber threshold. And look at that stock soar. And you know how they celebrated? We want to thank all of you subscribers, and to give our true gratitude, we are increasing the price, because this is not enough. Now it's time to squeeze every last dollar out of you 301.6 million subscribers with price hikes in the US, Portugal, Argentina, and yes, Canada as they project their revenue for 2025 now between $43.5 and $44.5 billion. But I'm happy to pay my extra $2 for my subscription now to make sure that these projections are made in 2025, Brandon.
Yes.
The little engine that could, Netflix.
300 million subscribers worldwide. That's the first time they've crossed that milestone. And it's well ahead of any other streaming service. This unfortunately, though, is the last quarter that they will actually disclose the number of subscribers. They would like you to focus on revenue going forward, I think.
Unless the subscriber number is to our advantage, and then we're not so shy about disclosing it.
Yeah. So all the major streamers do report the number, but I mean, Netflix is the runaway winner here. Even if, it's easiest to just talk about the U.S. because all the major ones that we talk about and think about are in the U.S., but they're well ahead of the others. You know, if there was a streaming war, Netflix has won it. And no, I don't own any Netflix stock. I've divested. I do not own any ByteDance. I do not own any Netflix. We're all in the clear here.
What about Tout? Any offshoots that you had investments in?
No, I have index funds mainly.
Well, the estimated number of subscribers in the U.S. I believe is now around 80 million.
That's what I if you just assume that these subscriptions are evenly distributed by population, it would be over 80 million accounts. And I would suggest that that's probably not even indicative of how many households that service is actually in, because there's some degree of password sharing happening. My Netflix account is being shared with at least two households. So there's that. And to put that in some perspective, let's say it's just 80 million households. Well, TBS, TNT, USA Network, the top cable networks in the United States are now in about 65 million versus Netflix, 80 million. So this is, you can see why this is of an advantage for WWE. It's probably better than being on a cable network. And Netflix is the only one that you can really say that about. The others at best are in 50 million households.
Yeah. And they did note that the price increases will see the standard tier going up $2.50 to $17.99 a month. The ad supported tier is being raised by $1 to $7.99 per month. So those will be going into effect. We also did have, of course, this quarter included the big Mike Tyson, Jake Paul fight in November, the two Christmas Day NFL games, and then going into January.
This is no WWE time yet.
Yeah, WWE is Q1, but WWE Raw and its viewership was brought up on the call, and we're going to hear from WWE fan, someone who we got to see on WWE programming on January the 6th. Fanatic Ted Sarandos talking about WWE.
WWE is off to a great start. Our first week, we drew about 5 million views, which is about two times the audience that Monday Night Raw was getting in linear television. Pretty consistent with how we modeled it, how we'd hope to build the audience for the league. We also saw that the non-live viewings in the day after the live event, viewing grew by 25%, mostly outside of the U.S. time zones. So this is a new viewing in the U.K., in Canada, Mexico, Australia, Brazil, particularly big markets. So we're really thrilled to see how that's going so far. In the U.S., our viewing of Monday Night Raw was as big as the Monday Night Raw viewing has been in 5 years. So we're super thrilled with how that's going and how that's coming out.
5 million views, almost twice as many as a...
He really underplayed it, too. He forgot that it was almost 6 million.
Well, you know what? They like to be, under-promise, over-deliver. Yeah, 5.9 million views for the January 6th episode. And we will, a bit later on, we'll look at the week two data as well, how much of that held up. But we can compare the two. But yes, I mean, obviously, the first week got off to a great start for Netflix, and I think that certainly it was going to be the most promoted show. It got a ton of attention on them, and also going to that, if we go with the 80 million figure, I mean, we are now in a world where Netflix in the U.S. is comfortably ahead of any of its cable competitors.
Yeah, it's should we do an unofficial coverage rating and divide the number of views that we estimate to be in the U.S. by the number of households that could have watched? But it's well ahead of any streaming service. It's well ahead of any cable network. As we said, it's maybe it's sort of similar to being on broadcast. I don't know if I would go that far, because we've seen the comparisons when Netflix has aired NFL games, and it's not quite what has been delivered on broadcast TV like ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox.
Let's transition and look. We did last week go through the viewership data that we had for the first week of WWE on Netflix. We now got the week two charts, and I know everyone is now making this a favorited tab to check in on. Yes. Every Tuesday.
And this will be coming in like a week after. So we've now had three episodes, of course, of Raw, but we just yesterday, or just on, I believe on Monday, people were reporting it yesterday. So maybe it comes out on Tuesday. In any case,
yeah,
it takes a week for this data to come out.
So what we had for week two, these are a lot of weeks to keep track of. The January 13th episode, the engagement was 3.7 million views. That compares to week one, which was 5.9 million. And the second week had 8.2 million hours viewed compared to 17.7 million for that January 6th edition of the show. So on the global chart, Raw ranked fourth for the week behind Missing You, American Primeval, and yes, Jerry Springer Fights Camera Action as well. Yes.
So how does this compare to what Raw usually does on the USA Network?
You tell me. This is a global number, so we have to take that into account.
Yes.
But we also do have the breakdowns that we can look at as well for the US chart itself.
Yeah, the moral of the story, it's going to be very difficult to figure out just how to compare this to our history of USA Network or even Spike TV viewership. We do know, though, that last week they announced, and this was data that was measured not by themselves, but by their third-party video amp, which is their replacement for Nielsen, which they're not working with on this. But it was 2.6 million accounts on average by the minute or the hour, and that is compared to the households. I think it is fair to compare it to the households in the United States that were normally watching Raw, which is 1.2. Again, 2.6 for that debut episode only versus 1.2. This episode, and this is 7-day viewership that Netflix is putting in this chart here. This is like a DVR plus 7 throughout the 7 days. And it's not just US that we're used to talking to. It's global. I don't know. So anyway, this week two was down, I believe I calculated it, 37% in global viewership. You know, if we were to say let's assume that it declined to the same degree in the United States. So 2.6 times what would that be? What's 100 minus 37? It's 43? No, 63, right?
Yes. If you're taking 37 from 100.
Yeah, so times, let's say 63, then it would be like 1.6 million accounts if we just extrapolated that, which would still be substantially higher than the 1.2 million households that Raw averaged throughout the year last year in the United States. Now, I'll say that, though, it took until week three for the SmackDown on Fox number to settle into its normal range. I believe it took until week three for the Dynamite number on TNT after its debut to settle into the normal range. Week three is a little different for Raw in this case, the show that just happened on Monday, because it was going head to head with the biggest college football game of the year, the national championship game. You'd figure that would have some impact, but we'll see as they continue to report this stuff as the weeks go on, and we can extrapolate. I'm sure they have the data for the US viewership. We'll see if that stuff ever gets reported.
Yeah, I mean, what we're left to analyze through these charts, the first week, I believe Raw was in the top 10 of, like, I think it was 26 countries. This week, it was 7 countries that had Raw in the top 10. And, I mean, it's really hard to draw any kind of conclusion on, to a lesser degree, NXT internationally, but more so SmackDown, which I think would be a more of a comparison point. All we know is SmackDown, both weeks that it's been on Netflix internationally, it has not ranked in the top 10, but that is, it's really hard to, like, if it's in the top 20, I would consider that a success when you're looking at everything you're up against Netflix. It also could be 40th. Like, we just don't know where, how much engagement SmackDown is getting, but it is very clear Raw is the, you know, it is the benchmark show for WWE, and it is the most watched of the programming.
Yeah. And to be clear, we get rankings for every single country that Netflix is in, but we don't get that viewership data. We only get this top 10. And we know that Raw was number four for both. I believe it actually ranked better. It was number four in this in week two, but it was number five. It just depends on what other content it's competing with in the ranks there. But it did well. And we'll see. I guess I assume there's going to be some weeks where maybe it just doesn't rank.
I think that's probably going to be the case. We will see. And for those curious, for week two, it ranked in the top 10 in the U.S., Canada, Bolivia, Ecuador, Mexico, and Guatemala.
Nice.
All right. So there you go. If you're looking for where are we going to see these PLEs this year? I mean, Ecuador, Guatemala, get ready.
I would note from Ted Sarandos' comment, he called out Brazil and Mexico as markets where the viewership was really strong, which are not markets that we think of as being the leading international markets for WWE. I would say it's the major English-speaking countries like besides the U.S., U.K., Canada, Australia, maybe Ireland. We think of, look where they've done international PLEs in Germany and France. We don't think of Brazil, but I suppose they're just not doing big events there because maybe it's just the economy isn't strong enough to go there and charge $300 for a ticket or something like that.
Well, let's stick on the WWE international front, and it's not too often that we get this individual speaking publicly. And therefore, when he does opt to speak on a stage, you welcome him as big of a deal as possible.
The president of WWE, Nick Khan!
And that was Nick Khan's introduction at the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority, an introduction befitting a WWE president as he was there on stage to talk about WWE taking over Las Vegas in April and the process behind this relatively quick deal that was put together with the Las Vegas authority to give them a $5 million grant, as I'm doing this off the top of my head, that Brandon has reported on, as well as rent-free usage of the convention hall for WWE The World, a branding campaign, and all of this. As you remember, last year around WrestleMania time, everyone assumed, is Minneapolis going to get Mania? WrestleMania comes and goes without an announcement of the next year's location, and then within several weeks, Las Vegas lands the two-night event.
Yeah, and I think the guy he was on the stage with is the gentleman in charge of the LVCVA, the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors
Authority. Steve Hill, I think is his name.
Steve Hill, that sounds right. People can find back in late July, I did this report detailing what we were able to gather from receiving a response to public records requests, because the LVCVA is a government entity. They had to disclose certain government information, including email records, that allowed us to get some insight. And it's true that this came together very quickly. So we'll see. We also got that they're going to do T-Mobile Arena for Raw as well as SmackDown. And it does look like they're going to get free usage. This is the in-kind value, the free usage of the convention center for the WWE The World. And I bet there's going to be some marketing banners around Las Vegas.
Yeah, and this did seem to be a speech, and I don't know if there was any Q&A component to this, but I'm sure in the back of Nick Khan's mind was that episode of Donahue, is if one of the questions is posed, but isn't all of this stuff fake anyway?
Keep in mind, in 1989, WWF at the time, now WWE, announced that we have predetermined outcomes. So please don't sit there thinking that I think the outcomes are real. The athleticism is real. The pageantry is real. What it takes for that level of storytelling is real. It's predetermined outcomes. So what you're going to see at our event, 50% of the people who attend our events attend with a child. 40% of our viewing audience are women. So you are going to see a multicultural, multi-generational event take place where everybody leaves happy.
They all leave happy knowing what a great night of scripted entertainment I just watched.
There was clearly like a meeting or something that happened. There was market research into, we've got to just make it explicitly clear for people so we can just get that out of the way, because it's the first thing that people think about when they're unacquainted with wrestling and they encounter wrestling, that we have to approach and get it off the table that, yes, this is fake. It's predetermined. It's scripted. What other buzzwords can we use? But it's great entertainment, and everybody leaves going home happy. I don't know. There is such a thing as heel heat, but let's not get into the weeds on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even to the degree of like a wink and a nod anymore. It very much from that launch on Netflix to messaging like this, it is like we want to lean into this as to we are fully embracing what we are and making it crystal clear. It's more so interesting, just the fact that this is obviously a strategy of theirs, one that I thought was a decades-old issue that would not be circling. But, I mean, of the people they are speaking to in an event like this, I guess that is still something that they feel.
And I think it is the thing for the most important audience, which is not wrestling fans who are already well acquainted with what wrestling is, but corporate executives and business partners and others who aren't acquainted with wrestling, who have to make these important business deals, which are far more important than just drawing fans who are pretty stable. But it's, you know, it's having to get that out of the way, I guess, with people who sort of don't know what to think of wrestling and maybe don't even completely understand what it is. They have to be reminded.
AEW, I mean, they are forcing our hand here, as we have literally just got a press release from AEW. Yes. About spring events coming up. So that does take us into a bunch of AEW stories. Let's go in linear fashion here, because last Wednesday, a graphic appeared. Did you know that AEW is going to Australia in a couple of weeks? This has been like one of the best kept secrets in pro wrestling.
I've heard.
Yes. Originally set for a stadium event, now has been downscaled in Brisbane. It is taking place on February the 15th. When? Where? Well, a graphic appeared last Wednesday that promoted 8 Eastern, 7 Central on TNT and Max. And every online sleuth immediately realizing, hey, wait a minute, the TNT schedule is listing NBA All-Star events on Saturday night at 8 o'clock on TNT. I reached out to AEW for clarification on this. I was directed to the same graphic that just listed 8 Eastern, and it's like, okay.
Maybe it's 8 a.m.
I literally asked, do you mean 8 a.m.? Because it actually did not say a.m. or p.m. And I mean, that's literally what I asked. It's like, does this mean 8 a.m.? And apparently it did not mean 8 a.m. I am still confused as to what the broadcast situation is going to be. I hope that is made clear tonight, because this can't air at 8 p.m. Eastern time on TNT. And whether this is Max exclusive, I mean, we will find out, but this event feels like it has been one that has grand confusion should be the name of the event.
Yeah. Is the All-Star game going to air on both TBS and TNT?
The All-Star game is Sunday. This is kind of like your slam dunk competition and all right. The periphery events that go with All-Star weekend. So that is what's listed for Saturday night at 8.
Okay. And what's on TBS? Do we know? Is it also that?
I do not know what's on TBS.
Okay. And the date of Grand Slam is the 15th?
February 15th.
Okay. Yes. The schedule doesn't go that far out yet on TBS. So I don't know. Maybe it's TBS. Certainly they can put it on a Max.
There is no restrictions to Max. So there is that. They have also announced, as of this morning, Revolution is going to be March 9th. And then the following month, they are going to the Leocora Center in Philadelphia for AEW Dynasty. Is the Leocora Center where we saw Supercard of Honor, or was that a different venue?
Yes, that's where I watched March Madness.
Yes, yes. I was literally trying to remember this morning. Have I been to this arena, and was I there last year? And I couldn't
remember.
Temple.
It's a temple arena. Yeah.
So that's where they're running. So this is technically the first AEW pay-per-view in the state of Pennsylvania, but they did host Supercard of Honor there last year.
This is where Tony Khan allegedly defamed the Tate twins, yes.
That's right. The legacy of Supercard of Honor. Yes. And then just coming down the pipe literally minutes ago was this listing of a bunch of spring events. And I haven't even had a chance to scan through this. But this is just a slew of events announced for March, with stops in Oakland, the theater at the Virgin Hotels in Vegas for Collision, a Dynamite and Collision taping at Omaha, Nebraska's Liberty First Credit Union Arena. That's a mouthful. Dynamite in St. Paul, Minnesota at the Roy Wilkins Auditorium, Collision in Milwaukee, Dynamite and a Collision taping in Peoria, Dynasty at the Leocora Center that we mentioned, and then going to Baltimore, the old stomping grounds where ROH would usually run, the Chesapeake Employers Insurance Arena. Some of these arena names are just getting out of control. That is on April the 9th. My immediate takeaway is this certainly seems like a lot of more, let's call them intimate venues for...
Or college sports level.
Yeah,
venues.
Like Milwaukee's a sizable venue that they're running in... In Wisconsin, the Leocora Center obviously is like a pretty size. That's
it's like 10,000, but it is a major college venue.
As is the Baltimore one, I think is a similar size as well. So it's like it's not like these are 2,000 seaters, but it does seem that's kind of where they are looking for. So there you have it. Nothing too groundbreaking here.
Yeah, the Leocora Center, I think, is about a 10,000 seat capacity. What's this Chesapeake, this Baltimore? This Baltimore venue is like a 5,000 capacity. So that is on the smaller end.
All right. This past weekend, GCW ran at the Hammerstein Ballroom, and they drew it was just over 1,700 that WrestleTix reported. Brett Lauderdale had stated that they topped a $100,000 gate for this show at the Hammerstein Ballroom. And it's always fun when any company runs New York because they are under the auspices of the New York State Athletic Commission. And thankfully, we have somebody that has been licensed under the New York State Athletic Commission.
Well, I think I've listed as an officer on a license. Not the leading officer, but maybe the second one. Wrestlers do not have licenses.
Wrestlers do not promote.
After I started, at least by the time I started wrestling, there were no wrestler licenses that you had to have.
So, I mean, coming out of this show, there was a lot of attention placed upon the fact of Allie Catch having this horrific injury where she broke her leg in two places, and this led to the show being stopped temporarily because at these events, you basically have to have an ambulance and a medic on site. They had to await the ambulance to be back, and this led to a lot of improvisation from various performers to kill time, and led to a 6+ hour show going down at the Hammerstein Ballroom. And
The ambulance rule is a relatively new rule that was established some 5 years ago or so, that you already had to have a doctor there, a licensed medical physician, but then you also have to have EMTs in an ambulance there. So what I understand is what happened when Allie was injured, she took the ambulance to the hospital. Thus, there was no ambulance present. They had to wait until either the same or another ambulance came back to the venue so they could continue the show.
Yes, in New York traffic during a potential blizzard as well. So, I mean, they did get the show back on track after that. It's been a very, I guess, polarizing show to many people, but it is always interesting when we find ourselves under the commission auspices here. And I mean,
I saw PCO really waged the battle against Too Many Belts, and so I saw he was sticking up for the idea that there are too many titles in wrestling.
I mean, he was just doing his part to, I think, eliminate one more title from professional wrestling. And hey, if we get an IP case coming out of this, Brandon, I think like...
Why would there be an IP case?
Well, we had a TNA championship on this broadcast.
Without permission?
Without permission.
Okay. But wasn't this like a weren't there interactions on the show, or did TNA do its own separate show?
TNA was on its separate show. TNA had nothing to do with this.
This was not in New York, the Genesis show then.
No, Genesis was in Texas.
Okay. Were both these shows happening at the same time? Why am I getting... Okay, okay.
Yes, they were running head-to-head. Okay. And while we're at it, with Genesis, and this will lead into our topic with Rich Van, is Genesis. WrestleTix coming out with a number today. They did over 4,000 at the Curtis Culwell Center in Garland, Texas, which that is a great number for TNA in this day and age. So whatever the factors are, whether it is momentum from this WWE relationship, overall interest in the TNA product, and what has been a pretty good market, especially for AEW that has run the Curtis Culwell Center consistently, TNA coming here, and it was a very well-received show overall, sometimes you do get a "she's a racist" chant in the midst of your broadcast that you have to maneuver around.
I did hear about that, yeah.
Yes, that is an interesting subject in and of itself, sort of the Tessa Blanchard subject matter, and whether what her ceiling is going to be as, I think, a tremendous performer, but one as well that you kind of got to see the best and the worst of being in business with Tessa Blanchard during this 20-minute match with Jordynne Grace.
Yeah, I think one of the big things one of the things we learned from speaking out, I think, is that if you're on the main roster, I think Matt Riddle was really the glaring example. If you're on the main roster with WWE and you're relying on things like traditional TV to get you exposure, that the level of scrutiny is not as high. But if you're relying on things like social media to get you over, where there's a lot of two-way communication, there's going to be a lot of people complaining to the indie promotions that are booking you. And Tessa Blanchard was below that line, right? When all this news came out about what her interactions were with other wrestlers. So I think, as far as what would happen if she ends up going to WWE, I think, it would probably be fine. I don't think you'd have that much pushback, but at a certain level of ground, grassroots pro wrestling, where it's all about this social media interaction and promotion, there's going to be a lot of pushback.
Yeah, and I think that it is, whenever it comes to these situations, whether you agree or disagree, it is always going to be weighted by what is the value this performer brings to us versus what is the risk or downside of it. And WWE,
Hulk Hogan's very lucky he's not an indie wrestler.
If Hulk Hogan was just a, pick your random 80s legend, WWE is probably not going out of their way to showcase that person. But it is Hulk Hogan, who comes obviously to them with an inherent value, enough that they are in business with this individual's beer company that he's a pitchman for. And I think it's going to be very curious to see this Saturday what level of involvement Hulk Hogan is attached to this Saturday night's main event broadcast. I know you were watching Raw with a fine-tooth comb, but there was a very... I don't know if there was any mention of Hulk Hogan on Raw in regards to...
Oh, I heard that there was. I heard CM Punk called him out.
You're right. Not a direct promo for Saturday night's main event, but CM Punk did bring up Hulk Hogan, and I thought that was deliberately done to see what reaction Hulk Hogan would get, also in front of a Texas crowd, which they'll be in front of on Saturday, and to sort of just gauge what the interest would be. And it was Hulk Hogan.
Having a baby face, a very popular baby face, do that. So I think it's kind of... predisposed.
Tipping the scales. Well, yeah. It was anyway, that was brought up, and I mean, Hulk Hogan has been all over the promos, but he's not being pushed on television for any kind of segment or even being mentioned as appearing on Saturday's broadcast on NBC. And I guess we will see what if any involvement Hulk Hogan has on Saturday, and if so, what that reaction is.
I suppose there's a creative idea that they could use to try to... And this is in San Antonio, this event, this Saturday night's main event.
Yes.
Maybe there's a creative way, and I think there were reports or rumors to this effect, that there's a creative way maybe for them to use the potential negative reaction that he might get to convert it into useful heel heat. I don't know. Do people really want to use those kind of political and moral issues as heel heat is another question, though.
Let's chat a bit about the WWE and TNA relationship. And last week we got the announcement. WWE, part of TKO Group Holdings and TNA Wrestling, one of the world's top wrestling brands and a subsidiary of Anthem Sports and Entertainment, today announced a multi-year partnership aimed at creating unprecedented crossover opportunities within WWE and TNA programming for NXT superstars and TNA wrestling stars. The agreement will enable talent to garner additional exposure across key WWE and TNA programming, including weekly flagship shows such as NXT, which airs live on the CW, and TNA Impact, select premium live events and TNA pay-per-views, in turn bolstering their in-ring development with exposure to world-class talent and coaching. First of all, just a lot of specific language we have. We have NXT superstars and TNA wrestling stars.
That was
the biggest
takeaway for me. Promote
premium live events while TNA still does antiquated pay-per-views. I mean, just to get all the terminology into one press release, Brandon, you almost need a decoder to decipher what all of this means.
Yeah, it's this is something that was happening for a while. Somebody who watches WWE programming even less than I do, but is very, you know, following the business of WWE very closely, actually asked me, is this a merger? And I had to explain, no, this is a continuation. This is just a formalization of something that's been happening for months in terms of just, it's a talent exchange. Is there anything beyond that? I don't know. There are, you know, you can come up with ideas of ways that this partnership could continue to benefit, at least in the short term, one another, especially if I'm TNA and could I use the Performance Center as a taping studio and save myself on a lot of production expense? That if that's feasible, that sounds like a great savings expense for TNA. Is there a way for WWE to help TNA make TV deals? There's Endeavor right there, and Endeavor and TNA are already in business with their TNA Plus streaming service. So maybe something like that works out. But I've heard that TNA is potentially going to work with CAA. At least at one point that was the case for shopping their TV rights. That being said, I don't know that there's a great market for TNA's TV rights, given their TV viewership on Access. Last we knew was somewhere just under 100,000 viewers. It's pretty small. Access is a pretty small cable network to begin with, but maybe in the short to medium term, this will continue to help them. We just talked about how their show on Sunday, correct? Yes. Did very well. So they are one of the few companies that last year was on the upswing aside from WWE.
I think that if you're TNA, I don't view this as one that comes with all that risk attached to it. I think I don't think anyone goes into these deals naive to past examples of WWE when it comes to competitors. I think TNA is a safe distance away from being classified a competitor. That for a TNA, yes. If you're going into this
safe
with
number three,
a very, very safe number three, and where they are in terms of, okay, talent that WWE may have interest and bring in, well, that was going to be the case regardless. I think for TNA that they have seen, at least from this past year, they benefited a lot from this relationship already. And if this thing blows up, I don't know if TNA is any worse off than they have been in the past year or so. So I don't view this as too much I'm not viewing this so much from like the risk side of things. More so I'm looking at it like, what does WWE stand to gain from this? And
mitigation of antitrust liability.
that's always a nice box to be able to check off. It's also, like, I think you can clearly see there is a philosophy of this version of WWE that wants to have the appearance of cooperation, and that they are able to, that their own NXT program has benefited. Like, when you have seen a Joe Hendry or a Jordan Grace show up, the audience has taken to them as being something. It's not as though these are unknown commodities that are coming onto WWE programming, and instead, like, they're treated as a big deal, and that has given them a just like an influx of talent that they can utilize. I think the idea of WWE if they feel there is a need for a TNA to be stronger in the marketplace, I think that they certainly can add some muscle to TNA on that front. Where I look at this as a potential downside is just when you're looking at the scope of the landscape, is that if WWE and TNA are kind of in sync with one another, I think like there's just such a concentration that WWE is accumulating from its efforts on the NIL in its NIL program, now into its ID program. Sorry, that name was escaping me. Like, they are controlling so many aspects of the industry from the very bottom rung to the top rung, and now a sizable portion in the middle, that if you're somebody that gets let go by a WWE and your option is AEW, and if AEW is not looking for you, it's like your options are kind of Japan or the Indies. Like, that's sort
of... You're saying that this increases the control potentially that WWE has over the industry as a whole.
I think so. I think very much so. Like, they are creating this vertical pipeline from an athlete that is fresh out of college to independent talent that they are going to have first dibs on with their deals. And now it's going to be implied, like, if you want to get to WWE and they're not interested in signing you, TNA is a great option to go. And that's that's now another pipeline to
so New Japan WWE. No, they might have some influence on as well, but New Japan. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, that's the part I look at in all of this. And I'm sure somebody that has some thoughts on WWE and TNA, you know him from ProWrestlingTorch.com and a frequent contributor here at Post Wrestling. He is Rich Fan. Rich, welcome to the program.
Hey guys, apologies for my Mr. X. I'm still convalescing with my torn Achilles. And so it's a very awkward look in terms of like, yeah, tore it, Brandon, during Turkey Bowl Thanksgiving. I was with some of my football players, intercepted the pass, but lost my Achilles. So
an actual football injury.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And it was actually the exact same spot my high school quarterback tore his ACL the last practice before our playoffs. So I think it's cursed.
Well, speaking of curses, we might get into the Buffalo Bills later because there's a big game coming up this Sunday involving the Chiefs and Bills. But let's talk about a big relationship here between WWE and TNA. Brandon and I have kind of been laying out some of our immediate thoughts to it. Well, a week into this formal announcement that we've seen in action over the last year. But Rich, kind of how are you viewing this? First of all, from the TNA side of things here, and what you see for TNA to gain from this, and if you see any downside for TNA strapping themselves to the industry leader.
I think it's a win-win for TNA because one of the things I look at with Anthem is they have a footprint in Canada. They need more of a footprint in the United States proper in terms of television carriage and a chance to make themselves a little bit more profitable. And I think by having WWE advertise, I was shocked when I saw the tweets and skeets, I guess, on Blue Sky coming out from WWE and some of their top talent and some of their top.
Triple H was promoting this pay-per-view.
Yeah. He's like, hey guys, go watch this. And that blew my mind. It really is a very good opportunity. And I heard you and Brandon talking about the elements of development and options, because when you marry this with WWE ID, it does make a path forward for TNA, but it also, what it does, in my opinion, for TNA is create a little separation between them and some of the other North American independent promotions and some of the other non-AEW entities out there. I think about, say, the MLW lawsuit. For WWE, this is a good insulation from the idea of being a monopsony or a monopoly, because you're now creating a path to say, here, we're playing kind with what should be one of our quote-unquote opponents. And that, in turn, ties into the WWE ID, because if you notice, some of those first WWE ID folks that were featured had been on AEW television before. They'd been on Darks. They'd been on Dark Elevations. They'd been on Collision. And so having these folks like a Jack Cartwheel under contract and saying, hey, we might not have room, as you mentioned, John, we might have room for you, but maybe you can go do Sacrifice and you might be in a six man, or you might do a dark match, as we saw with the pay-per-view this weekend. And I think those are good opportunities for setting up TNA as another brand. Now, I wouldn't go so far as to say this creates an opportunity for them to be the number two wrestling company in America. Far from it. AEW has that as far away as WWE and AEW from a profit standpoint. It's even further between AEW and TNA. And so I don't think there's anything to worry about there. But when you look, there is this, I think AEW has taken some of the WWE guys that have had that animus toward WWE, and most of the folks that are currently now in TNA are what I would call WWE either agnostic or just they've made peace with their run in WWE. So it isn't that traditional old school TNA. Here's my opening promo of the ways I was wronged in that other company. You have a Nick Nemeth against Joe Hendry, and that wasn't a story at all in that matchup. You have Jordan Grace leaving, apparently allegedly to go to WWE, and her and Tessa had far different issues, including the crowd they had to deal with going into that match. I think this is a win-win-win for both companies in that you have the talent exchange. You kind of have this opportunity to remove the semblance of the monopsony. And then I think finally, as I said at the beginning, this is just a good opportunity for TNA to kind of fill their houses. Look in the shots of Genesis and seeing how well they did in terms of getting tickets out and getting the word out. I think that also was really strong because of the relationship.
Yeah, I guess one thing I want to discuss too is what always comes up when WWE finally starts to interact with other wrestling companies is to look back at the history of the 80s and how Vince you know, you guys correct me on the details here if I'm wrong, but you know, that Vince would approach other territories in the 80s as he was just as he was about to expand and say, I'll give you some tape here, some content that you can air. And then all of a sudden he would go into those territories after those stars that were on that tape got over, and then basically, you know, run those smaller territories out of business. And then the other more recent example is the NXT UK adventure, where they signed up a lot of wrestlers that were being used, especially like by independent promotions like Progress and ICW. And eventually, not that there weren't other issues, including speaking out, that contributed to this, and COVID-19 that contributed to this, but eventually those independent promotions were no longer able or had access to use that talent. And the Brit Rest scene is pretty decimated at this point. Is there any kind of risk here with TNA in that, well, we already have, speculation and rumors about Jordan Grace going to WWE. Maybe Joe Hendry is next in line, and maybe you end up with a near future where TNA doesn't have as many of these marquee stars, or is it just sort of, it's the third biggest company in the US, and that's just sort of the graduation of these stars. They go to WWE once they become successful enough.
I look at it as the graduation, like you're mentioning, Brandon. Furthermore, I would look at the example of modern AEW New Japan relations, where you have so many main eventers and so many people whose contracts expire. They come over to AEW, and it isn't seen as a negative. It's seen as a net positive, because there's the opportunity for them to come back at some point and wrestle. I would say in the case of Brit Rest and in the 80s, it was very clear to see. I mean, I remember talking with Jim Smallman in New Orleans and how excited I was, like, oh, buddy, you're way too excited about this. Like, have you not? He's like, it won't happen to us. And then like a week later, I saw him in a suit. And I was like, you never wear a suit. This is like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. You're a pod person now. I get it. It's fine. Everyone needs to make money. I think the difference here is because of those antitrust and because of that MLW lawsuit, WWE very much has a hot stove they should not put their hand on when it comes to trying to go that step further by trying to take over TNA. And frankly, that's another cost where if you did absorb them, you make more money working with them than absorbing them, because we've seen what happens with TKO when they work with some of these entities and they streamline. Like, you don't need five travel people. You don't need five folks that handle events. And I don't think you need that if you're going to add on. You already have 300 wrestlers. Why add another 110?
I just wonder if it will be within 6 months or 12 months. Could we get Matthew Raywalt just going off on that money mark? Nick Khan, they took Joe Hendry, they took Jordan Grace, and they've done nothing with him. I mean, this could be the commentary wars I look forward to as well. An aspect to all of this, and this certainly ties into NIL, Rich, is what forces are at play in terms of AEW and its recruitment strategy. Like, instead of looking at like who's going to be headlining our shows a year from now, if you're looking 5 years from now for AEW, it's like the independent scene is going to be like, WWE is aggressively scouring the independents. There is now a unspoken pathway that, hey, you go to TNA, this is your audition for, if you want to get to WWE, this is a great pathway to go that direction. And with AEW, I think it's imperative for them that they need to have their strategy in place and to be going just as aggressive for it's like the 20 somethings that are on the independents at the moment and who you have your eye on, because this is going to be an arms race for talent that WWE is much more focused on signing talent at a young age versus just whose contracts are coming up in AEW to get now.
Yeah, I think about, and this is kind of a weird analogy, but you brought me on, so you get what you get. When my son first went to kindergarten, they gave him a class of 2030 shirt. And that freaked me out, because I was like, wait a minute. And now I look, it's 2025. He's in seventh grade. The math is mathing, as they say. WWE is looking at the class of 2030, 31, 32 for their wrestlers. AEW needs to do the same thing. We have a great example on their television, in fact, Wrestling Tonight, of them doing that, in Nick Wayne. They need to find more Nick Waynes. They need to invest in them, get those pre-contract signings. And the thing that's helpful for me, I think, that gives me calm that they will do it, is this is no different than what Tony Khan does with Fulham with their academy players, in terms of you get to a certain, get to age 18, then you sign a professional contract, then you move into the club and develop. Same thing with NFL. I think as much as Tony said over the years, he doesn't want to mingle the waters too much. If I have a guy that's getting cut from my practice squad that might not have a chance, I might pull him to the side and say, this isn't working out. But if you ever want to consider wrestling, talk to me or here's some people you might want to talk to. And that's where, you know, you have this and you have access to hundreds of undrafted players that WWE will not see until either they've gotten them in college. Like I think, for instance, with Brock Recksteiner, you know, I was watching ESPN's bowl game when Scott was on and Braun was on talking about the fact, yeah, WWE just offered my son a couple of weeks ago an NIL deal. That should be an easy thing for them to do. You know who Scott Steiner's son is. Everyone knows that. Just like when I saw the Indiana bowl game and Illinois being Tony's alma mater, they were the only school that had an AEW championship to celebrate. I was like, that's smart. That made me think he gets it. Same thing with this. I think it's going to be slow because you can't catch them all. Yeah, there it is. The fact that he has the chain mail.
We're looking at an image of Brock Recksteiner wearing the Scott Steiner chain head dressing and a big gold belt.
And that was his photo for his team photo for Jack State. Yeah. So that was just one of those things.
This is the Brock I see WWE getting behind.
Yes. And then Braun and Brock. It's like, it's like these guys, they just pick the most aggressively. Like if you sound like you could run through a wall, that's the name we want to pick for our kids. Like Brick will probably be the next. Braun, Brick, and Brock Steiner, just Lego humans. But yeah, back to your original question, John. I think for them, AEW's goal should be find the young talent. In the case of Nick, they had the connection with Buddy, and then they bring in Mother Wayne. In the case of some of these younger folks, just take the time to find the wrestlers that are standing out and invest in them. Because with this new television deal, Tony could put aside $10 million and say every year we're going to identify five people that JR can do what he did back when he was in WWE. Pay for their school, pay for some of their basic things, say go get seasoned, and when it's time, we'll call you up. And I think that would be helpful for him too, because as little as he does, you know, he does the main events with the mindset of like, I'm locked in and I can do this. I think that would occupy him and give him an opportunity to do something that really is a blind spot for the rest of their staff. Like talent ID is something I think they really need to invest in over this next year, because just like with the aforementioned Brandon examples, one of the reasons I got into arguments with folks back at the time of the Brit Rest was that the U.S. environment between Evolve and all of those offshoots were also being plundered. And that you had so many wrestlers getting sucked into the NXT vortex that a lot of those shows, it was just kind of same five guys, or Johnny Gargano's being allowed to wrestle with Drew Galloway and all these other sorts of things.
If you're looking for flexible workouts, Peloton's got you covered. Summer runs or playoff season meditations. Whatever your vibe, Peloton has thousands of classes built to push you. We know how life goes. New father, new routines, new locations. What matters is that you have something there to adapt with you, whether you need a challenge or rest. And Peloton has everything you need whenever you need it. Find your push. Find your power. Peloton. Visit onepeloton.com.
When you look at TNA and let's say that this is something that, you know, they get a healthy amount of crossover, I think there is still this ceiling that is Access TV. And if you take TNA and I look at kind of like your best case scenario is if you could pivot to something of an FS1 level, do you see a higher ceiling for TNA? Are some of these like attendances that they drew in Montreal last summer for Slammiversary, for Genesis this past Sunday, do you see a higher ceiling for TNA, or is this sort of their lot in the wrestling landscape that there will be some ebbs and flows, but they are pretty much where they are when it comes to scale? Or is television a big difference maker, that a bigger platform that they could expand to be something bigger?
I'm going to defer to Brandon on this, but I had a really good conversation with a guy I coach football with that is a math teacher by trade. And he did a really cool plot for his students that he shared with me of Major League Baseball teams and success by measure of how much money they put in. And his takeaway was, it wasn't you put in X amount of money, it's how smart are you spending the money you put in. And I think it's the same thing with TNA. They have given themselves the self-imposed budget, and they will not go above it. I would hope with something like an FS1, and now with this partnership with WWE, they could be more speculative and they can invest a little more. And I think that would then in turn allow them to do some of those things, John. And I think, and this is where that relationship comes in, if they're borrowing, like let's say I saw in the chat, someone mentioned Carmelo Hayes. If a Carmelo Hayes is disgruntled, he probably won't ask out. But if he has a pretty good six-month program in TNA and then they come back and they have a plan for him, that's a really good win-win for both companies. And so I think with those sorts of relationships, it's echoes of ECW when WWE would send down an Al Snow. And, you know, the world of Al Snow and WWE at that time was far different than I remember seeing folks in the ECW arena all with mannequin heads screaming as, you know, his theme song's playing in the background. And I to this day, I'm still amazed that that was something that happened the way it did. So I think that's a way. And then I also think that for TNA, the crowds will, I think they can grow past where they're at. But again, outside of the speculation, the one thing they would also want to do is think about how they're different than AEW and how they can maintain that difference without being disrespectful. Because it's one thing to be number two and you're a challenger brand and you're being brash. Number three, no one cares about Mr. Pibb. No offense to any Pibb heads out there. Coke, Pepsi, Mr. Pibb's just sitting there. He's not throwing stones at anybody. He's just taking it easy. And so I think Mr. Pibb needs to chill in this regard too.
Yeah, I think if we're entertaining the idea that maybe TNA, maybe with helps in some form or fashion from WWE, could get on FS1, that would be a really good thing for them. I don't know that it makes that big of a difference to their other businesses yet. We've seen sort of a history of TNA being on Spike TV where, you know, we saw that, you know, sort of almost no matter what their TV rating was, no matter what sort of the other trends in the business were, they drew a pretty consistent, not only well TV rating, but pay-per-view buys. I guess I think that the only way that, say, their attendance starts to really improve even beyond what it has improved over the last year would be that if it's really offering something that is different than what WWE is. And I see what they're doing is they're on a really good trajectory. I think they're going to sort of plateau where they are soon, but I don't know what's going to make TNA into, or any wrestling brand into, something that people feel really passionately about enough to promote it online organically, enough to fly across the country like we saw in 2018 with a lot of different brands to spend hundreds of dollars on tickets. I don't know what that thing is when finally WWE is serving those fans in a significant way.
You sort of just look at this being a potential tool for a lot of different fronts that TNA can serve. Like, I don't know if WWE is at a point now where you can create much more television at this scale and wanting to add more production, more booking of arenas, that TNA can really serve as a function for something. And whether it is, like, listen, if they were, and I'm just throwing out FS1 for several reasons, but I mean, the indication was that Fox was not anti-wrestling. It was anti-wrestling at an exorbitant amount that we can't make our money back on. So I look at that as a door that is maybe, it is slightly ajar rather than closed, that you already have a relationship. And now TNA is coming into any negotiation as, hey, we have on paper here a relationship with WWE. Like, we are, you know, several degrees from WWE now. I think that will resonate as well. And what value you can find if you're a network and if you're WWE, that TNA can serve a purpose. Like, if they can inject a discussion that now focuses on AEW versus TNA, I think that is I don't think that is a clear number one priority, but it's a nice byproduct of this. If people start talking about AEW and TNA battling for market share, that WWE, it's now creating a UFC PFL type of distance from its nearest competitor, that I think they would love that discussion to be out there instead.
We have a couple of super chat questions related to this. Do you see Endeavor or TKO buying Anthem Sports? I would say definitely not, because of the antitrust risk associated with that.
No, I don't see that happening either. I think if Anthem was ever Anthem Sports is kind of like the parent company of TNA, and I think even to the degree of, if you're extrapolating this to selling TNA, I think if they were really thinking of unloading TNA, I think they would have given a lot more thought to Scott D'Amore wanting to purchase it a year ago and not wanting to entertain that idea at the time either. So, no, I don't see Anthem being folded into Endeavor and TKO. I mean, Mark Shapiro has already gone so many times about having to explain PBR, explain getting into boxing. I mean, there's only so many things that we are not into M&A, okay? That's clearly not his favorite topic. Do you see anything ruining this partnership? Let me throw this. This is a slight change to this question, but I'll throw it out to you, Rich. Is that the name Tessa Blanchard has come up plenty since Sunday, and those 15 seconds of the audience chanting "She's a racist." And do you feel that if this is all sort of a Tessa Blanchard U.S. reclamation attempt? Are you scared off if you're WWE of just not wanting to go down this route of potentially having this similar chant on your own television? As strong a performer as Tessa Blanchard may be, I think Sunday was a great reminder of, you know, the skill set she presents. She comes off like a big star, but she also comes with this baggage that I just thought it was such a bad look on Sunday to hear this chant for the time it lasted from this crowd in Texas.
If anything, that crowd may have taught WWE in advance what they might hear next time Terry Bollea shows up.
I mean, that's going to be a big focus on Saturday. And it was like they were very mum on the Hulk Hogan front on Raw Monday night in terms of like what kind of involvement, like he's been plastered on these promos, but it's certainly they are not leading you to Saturday to tune in to see Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. And one of the things you mentioned, John, when it comes to this, I chatted with Wade yesterday, and I want to share with the folks here, you guys here with Post. When you look at TNA's roster, TNA is the perfect place for you not to buy, but to incubate talent like this. Because if you have questionable folks, TNA takes the bullet, you take the profit. And so when you look at, oh my God, Brandon, as always, you rock. Quinn Ojinaka, Moose. Moose in the NFL had been arrested for simple battery, spousal abuse. He has been radioactive since. So many years have passed. If they want Moose, this is the time to get him and to slowly integrate him in a way where folks won't pay attention. The Hardy Boys, it's so much easier for them to be visitors from TNA on a Legends trip than to have all the legal and age-related issues. Legal in the case of Jeff, age in terms of Matt. Matt's, you know, he's just trying to live his life. He's not trying to get 5, 6, 7 star matches. He just wants to entertain and kind of do his job. They could visit WWE without having to be on that schedule or Jeff have to be held beholden to kind of rules and regulations he might not necessarily always need to be held to in TNA. And then last but not least, you just mentioned her, Tessa Blanchard. In the case of Tessa, I don't think they can touch her right now, especially given the stuff going on with Hogan.
Yeah.
In the future, I can probably, you know, I'm not going to bet my house because I think that would be irresponsible and my wife would kill me. But I think at some point they want Tessa Blanchard and Charlotte Flair to wrestle. And if that's 3 years from now, they can wait because they can, again, let TNA take the bullets on it. If they want to grab, you know, we think about Zachary Wentz coming back to NXT. I never thought that would happen. I never thought I would see the Rascals have a reunion on NXT television because of the issues that precluded bringing all three of them in the first time. But because they're representing, quote unquote, TNA, it made it a lot easier. And so I think those sorts of passports is what I've been calling them will allow for some of those things to continue.
Yeah, I think it's a real interesting one with Tessa Blanchard. Like I can't say it was surprising to hear that because, you know, she showed up at Final Resolution, and then we had like the tapings afterwards in Atlanta. But this was kind of like your first time that you had built up a match. You had promoted the show very heavily around Tessa Blanchard. She had even done some media leading into this as well. So, I mean, TNA is certainly trying to make Tessa Blanchard like a central figure for its 2025 plans. But I think that was like a stark reminder of like this is an audience is very aware of her past discretions, and we're not shy of vocalizing them. And I think WWE, they have to be on the more sensitive side coming off of this Hogan stuff that is not just a cameo on your show, but now he's peddling a product that you are now a business partner in as well. So it's not a case of just cutting ties with the guy, because you're basically in business with this real American beer, that there is a need to showcase him every so often, and perhaps as close as a Saturday. And that announcement, like that treatment on Saturday, if he is put in front of a live crowd, like that will be a major focus of the show, much like that was the most carried story coming out of that Netflix debut across all these like non-wrestling sites. Like from a pop culture standpoint, like that was what was focused upon.
And one thing I would add too, John and Brandon, when you look at what's going on with WWE, there is another stumbling block outside of the racism allegations with Tessa. And that's been the other part, which was the bullying.
Yep.
When you have someone who's a key entertainer and key mid-card talent like Chelsea Green quote tweeting and responding to those interviews you mentioned saying, I'm sorry goes a long way, as she did a couple of weeks ago, in terms of, yes, I'm sorry that you had ideations of self-harm. I'm sorry that there were situations where you felt like your anxiety and your mental health were at risk. But you never formally apologized for the treatment I experienced. And so for her to localize it that way, it would behoove WWE, like Wade always uses the phrase of the absence of irritants. You have an absence of irritants in the WWE locker room. And if you bring Tessa in, even as a TNA like ambassador or visitor, you're going to alienate someone who's done a really good job for you the last few years at the expense. Is the juice worth the squeeze there?
Yeah. And just finishing up on the Tessa front, it is interesting because on Thursday, presumably she'll be on the show in some form or fashion. It's a live episode as well. It's also in San Antonio, which is where Joe Blanchard famously promoted. If this becomes something of a recurring issue, like this type of chant directed at Tessa Blanchard and your TNA, is there a certain point where we have to address it in somehow through Tessa addressing it on television? Or is this something that you continue to, like, she's a heel, we're just going to press through and we're not going to acknowledge this aspect that enough of a percentage of our audience is aware of. And now this precedent of a chant directed at her has been established after this past weekend.
I think some of it's going to be the idea of, if you're okay with the character getting that heat, I don't think anyone in this right mind would want someone chanting, "You're a racist," instead of like the first one of "F you, Tessa." That was general, like a little salty, but general wrestling.
They'll take that. Yeah. Yeah.
But like, she's a racist. I think there has to be a sit-down.
I would never
interview.
Want that on my television. Like,
no.
I would just
want to be next to that.
I would never want to be attached to that. That's why I just felt it was such a poor look on Sunday, and you either know the story, or if you don't, you're going to find out about the story now. And I can't imagine TNA wanting to have to combat that every time a real pushed talent in Tessa that feels like is going to be one of your marquee female stars this year is like, I don't think this is going to be a one and done that we heard this past Sunday.
She's going to have to make amends. And one of the things I've thought about is, just because you say you're sorry doesn't mean people have to forgive you. But if it's going to be a public apology, it can't be in character. Do it as a sit-down thing. Do it as something you put out, like from the desk of Tessa Blanchard, and she just kind of addresses everything and gets it out of the way. Because if you keep playing dumb or you try to make it part of her character, similar to the stuff that MJF was saying with Jeff Jarrett with regards to their significant others, like there's a level of kind of like impropriety and kind of crassness. Like if I'm going to apologize for being racially insensitive and a bully just because my character needs to make that money, it's going to be very obvious to everyone in the room. That's why you're making the apology. It's like saying, "I'm sorry," with a smile on your face after having said something vile to someone else. I think she needs to figure out where she's at with that, because if she's okay with the continued, "I didn't say I was sorry, but I'm mentally in a place where I don't feel like I need to remember any of the stuff that went down," that's not going to help them, and it's not going to help her.
Maybe we'll get a sit down with Jesse Ventura and Hulk Hogan on Saturday. Maybe that'll be, Hulk Hogan will ask for forgiveness.
Oh, man.
For which Brother, I think we just got off on the wrong foot here on Netflix. Anyway.
They'll make up and they'll announce a new wrestlers association that they're starting.
That's it. I think very, very likely, Brandon. I expect that Wrestlers Association to come together any day now. Rich, we thank you as always for your time. We wish you a continued rehabilitation from this torn Achilles. It is certainly not taking your foot off the gas when it comes to producing great shows with Wade Keller. And where can everyone check out more of the great work of Rich Van?
Yeah, sure. And thank you. The wordsmithery was outstanding there. You can find me over at the Pro Wrestling Torch. I do a column, I want to say, every 6 weeks or so, as well as my weekly podcast, Everything with Rich and Wade Keller. I also do the Deep Dive, which is a little bit more like every few months with Will Cooling and a mailbag with my friend Josh Mustachio, just kind of talking about the events of the day. And of course, here at Post, you can find me and the main man, W.H. Park, doing MCU Later, where we hang out and about and talk about the world of Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I will say, just because he is near and dear in my heart, even this week, best of luck to Brandon's Bills. They're no longer my Bills. I made the decision when they decided they didn't want Mr. Mahomes that I was going with him in the move, and they got me in the trade. But
Okay, so my memory does serve. I do remember at one point I thought Rich Van was a Bills fan, and then I see him tweeting in support of the Chiefs all the time, and I was really my world was shattered at that point.
Well, Brandon, one of the things that I saw you tweet, like, we're in the window. I was like, oh man, he's coming hard. If anyone wants to search Rich Van Patrick Mahomes, I used to write for USA Today Sports Media, doing the NFL draft for the Bills as a Bills fan. I'd been a Bills fan up until the point they decided they didn't want Patrick Mahomes. And when they made
What's wrong with Josh Allen?
Well, this was the year before they drafted Josh Allen. In fact, I wrote an article for my buddy Joe's Buffalo Wins website at the time. That's, I think it's been like zombified, like zombie, all these other places, like, you know, where I said they're going to go after Josh Allen because it seemed like the way his grit, the way he worked at Wyoming, I felt, and this is diving into something that's really, I apologize in advance, I felt that there were a lot of privilege given to Josh going in that a lot of black quarterbacks hadn't been afforded in terms of accuracy, touchdown interception ratio, small school he played in. And I really didn't like that. And I saw Mahomes hearing a lot of raw, especially when I had to interview some people who were former members of the Bills organization and the way they felt about it, most notably the former general manager. And I want to give credit to Ty Dunn, who covers the Bills. Really good job of kind of like getting out like both stories of how the Bills got to Josh Allen, how the Chiefs got to Patrick Mahomes, and how Terry Pegula kind of had his questions about both. But ultimately, Josh has developed in a way I think is magnificent. The people I know that are like awesome Bills fans, I will not be unhappy. I mean, I'll be unhappy that they didn't get a chance for a three-peat, but I won't be unhappy for them. So if they did have a chance to get to that fifth Super Bowl, I cried through the first four when every loss happened. I'll be happy for y'all if you win. I would just say if you do beat the Chiefs, in the words of Adrian, win.
Who is going to be the representatives taking on the Bills or Chiefs? Can we get a prediction on the NFC Championship game?
Eagles and Commanders, right? No.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Yep. Oh God, I think for me, I would assume just because of the setup of their run game, the Eagles. But the way Jaden Daniels has played for the Commanders, I have never seen a rookie play like this before. Like, he is poised. He's like 8 pounds. It's like watching Darby Allin play quarterback. Like, no matter how hard you hit him, the dude doesn't go down. Like, look at that picture right there. Like, he had that same effect at LSU. You'd watch him. And if you ever saw the Family Guy meme of Lois throwing herself head first down the flight of stairs, that's Jaden Daniels when he's like running with the ball, but he throws it magnificently. So I'm going to say Eagles versus AFC representative in the Super Bowl or the Super Bowl.
Well, we won't put you on the spot for what's going to be a very dramatic game between the Bills and Chiefs this coming Sunday. Thank you as always, Rich, for joining us, and continued success over at PW Torch and a staple here at Post Wrestling alongside the great WH Park. Thank you so much, Rich.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Rich Van joining us. We had one more super chat here, more so a statement. With Megan Bain back, AEW needs to build with women. All right, there you have it. Just all women's company, all elite women.
Yes. Well, they've done a lot to improve their women's division. In the last year or so.
as of right now, Grand Slam Australia. It's a one match show for the women's championship.
Is that the only match that's announced at this point?
That's the only announcement we have so far. So hopefully more come. They still have got what, three weeks or so until they make their way there. Yes. And that is going to wrap up the show. Unless was there any other football talk you wanted to get out of the
no,
way?
No, briefly. And we wanted to touch on the Grant and yes. Holker lawsuit, which is in Connecticut. So Janelle Grant, while the federal lawsuit was on hold, she has been petitioning for evidence that she wants to extract from Dr. Holker, who is the doctor at Peak Wellness in Connecticut, which is the clinic that she was sent to by Vince McMahon. The case was supposed to have a hearing or a conference the other day, and that has been postponed, at least for the time being, because it sounds like they might be coming to some sort of settlement. What that would entail, I have no idea. Again, what General Grant is pursuing is evidence. There is a lot of litigation back and forth about medical records that were already purportedly given to her, but there was a list of other evidence that she wanted, including to depose Dr. Carl Holker. So maybe there's some sort of agreement that they're working on coming to, but we don't know. We'll continue to follow.
Yes, and Jumanji Hunter was asking if we got an update on whether Janelle could amend her complaint, and that is still...
They have until the end of the month to submit an argument about why they should be able to amend the complaint. Then the judge will decide... Or maybe the defendants may even retort and say this is why she shouldn't be allowed. That might actually be happening. It's going to be a while before she amends the complaint if she does.
All right. And that will bring us to an end of the show. I am back tonight right after AEW Dynamite with Wei Ting. We go live at postwrestlingcafe.com if you want to join us live. We will also have the show review portion out for everybody later on this evening. And then coming up, we have the WrestleNomics report this week. Any sneak peek at what could be coming up in this week's report?
I'll write it on Friday and I'll release it on Friday in all likelihood. So sort of it's a written version of the podcast method. Yes. Whatever news is in the news by then. And I'm also considering let's just have an open strategy discussion. So the newsletter will consist of like five topics in any given week. Should I just start publishing? And that's maybe kind of what I did today with the Netflix ratings news. Should I just start publishing those things on their own rather than jamming them into one big piece?
I think you could do both. I think you could have them as individual stories, and then you have kind of a collection that comes out that is the WrestleNomics report for people that maybe a story
both.
Falls
just
through the cracks.
Bombard people with as much content as possible. That is, that is a prevailing strategy.
I like the audio version as well. You can sign up for the WrestleNomics report at patreon.com/WrestleNomics or Substack.
WrestleNomics.substack.com.
Okay.
So either one works. For now, the Patreon will get you more content, though.
Yes. So a reminder to everybody out there that if you sign up for the Post Wrestling Cafe or the WrestleNomics Patreon combined, it's still cheaper than Netflix's standard tier. So remember that. No price increases from WrestleNomics or Post Wrestling. Okay, yes. Folks, even though it might affect our guidance for 2024 and how many billions we're going to be bringing in.
You'll get no revenue. Hulk Hogan ads too. In addition,
no, we will never sign a beer sponsorship. We promise nothing on our mats. We keep them we keep them clean. But that is going to wrap up the show. Thanks to everyone for joining us live or listening after the fact. A big thank you to Rich Fan for joining us, and we're back every Wednesday 1 p.m. Eastern time. And that concludes Pollock and Thurston.
Hair thinning can happen for so many reasons. Whether it's stress or hormones or anything, at Nutrafol, we've learned that real change starts below the surface. Our hair growth supplements take a whole body approach and target the key root causes of hair thinning, so you can see visibly thicker, stronger hair in 3 to 6 months.
Hair growth starts from the inside at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com.